For an even better way to listen to Football Weekly at home, at work or on the go, head to soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly or download the SoundCloud app for Android and iPhone.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, guess what? Controversy at Anfield as Liverpool snatch draw from the jaws of defeat and player from the jaws of Luis Suarez. Pod says it's not the first time Suarez has made a meal of things in the box and asks, can Liverpool now afford to lose a player who approaches the big clashes with relish and a nice Chianti? And will too much bran in his diet mean he'll suddenly have to go? Moving on, and speaking of munching players, Champions League! Bayern take on Barcelona, Borussia meet blooming Real Madrid. There's Europa League too, that relegation scrap. Plus all the drama at the bottom, game over at Underhill, Serie A and more in today's Football Weekly. Here's what we got for you today, listeners. Amy Lawrence.
Hello.
Hi, Amy. John Ashdown.
Hello.
Hi, John. And hi, Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Well, we'll talk about the big Luis Suarez affair very, very shortly. But let's start with some actual football and the absolutely terrific second half at White Hart Lane, or at least the 7 minutes when it all happened. Spurs roaring back from a goal down to win 3-1 against Man City. A lot of love out there for Andre Villas-Boas this morning.
Yeah, I was minute-by-minuting this game, right. And it was a cracker. It was a really, really good game. And for an hour, for more than an hour, it was a very even contest. City took the lead early, and there was chances, there was crunching tackles, a couple of fantastic moments of play, particularly from Tevez. And then Andre Villas-Boas changed it all around, made some tactical tweaks, got rid of Emmanuel Adebayor, jigged and rejigged his lineup, moved Bale around and turned it all over.
And the perception is that while all this was happening, Roberto Mancini was jigging and rejigging with his scarf.
Well, yeah, I think that is the perception, isn't it? I mean, it did happen very quickly. Well, between taking Adebayor off and it becoming 3-1 was something like 7 minutes. So it wasn't like Mancini had much time to track, but it doesn't make him look very good, does it? It looks like Villas-Boas is the proactive kind of young tactical genius, and Mancini looks a bit sort of staid and tired.
Complaining about his players' attitude. A lot of that from managers at the moment. Dempsey was good as well. It wasn't just Villas-Boas. I thought Clint Dempsey gets a lot of stick for not being as good as he used to be at Fulham. Can't play out wide.
Yeah, and he played in sort of two or three different positions as well by the end of the game. But people like Huddleston, when he came on, I thought he played well. And Defoe took that goal fantastically, the second goal. And it was interesting that the Spurs started with the game plan of getting Bale sort of romping through the middle in that kind of way that we've seen him a few times this season. And it wasn't working. And all the changes meant that in the end, the final goal was Bale romping through the middle. So it kind of, he made all the changes to get that original game plan to work. It was good to watch. And it's a huge win for them, obviously.
Absolutely, and a huge defeat for City, because it means that United can seal the title on Monday evening if they win against Aston Villa. Did you see the game, Amy?
I thought Spurs were fabulous in that last bit. And it also, it just goes to underline the importance of just having a little bit of patience with a manager. And it would have been easy with Villas-Boas. So the beginning of the early days with Spurs, I think people were waiting to be convinced. I think the sort of default mechanism was there was a little bit of scepticism there. And obviously the Spurs fans were very hopeful, but outside of Tottenham, I think people weren't necessarily anticipating that he was going to come out of his shell and emerge into the manager that Chelsea thought that he would be, coming up for 2 years ago. And he looks very much so comfortable at the moment. Sometimes you just see the right fit between a manager and a club. And at the moment, it looks very much like Villas-Boas and Spurs are the right fit.
Yeah, he looks really happy in his work, and the players seem to like him, the fans like him, and I'd say there could be a very long, fruitful relationship.
The atmosphere looked incredible there at White Hart Lane, though. It was really rocking.
It's still such an intimate ground. I mean, you know, you're more used to increasingly going to new build stadia these days, and they have been plans afoot for some time to redevelop White Hart Lane, and I think that's still on the cards, although they've got to generate quite a bit of money, and they will be still on the same patch, and I believe they're going to turn the pitch around.
Why would they turn the pitch around?
Because the footprint that they've got at White Hart Lane is quite small, so for some reason that seems to work better with them creating the oval that they need to get a 60,000-odd stadia. But they will lose something, because pretty much anybody who's moved to a new build, I think, would agree that it is difficult to generate that same intimacy, and I think you still get that at White Hart Lane.
Right, okay. Now,
one thing I did want to point, although we should give all this credit to Andre Villas-Boas, the bigger portion of credit has to go to me for writing 2 minutes before Spurs' goal, Spurs have run out of ideas. And within the next 10 minutes, they'd scored three. So, you know, let's give credit where it's due.
All right, then. Now, meanwhile, up at Anfield, Liverpool held to a draw by Chelsea. Still a good point for Liverpool. If you'd offered them a draw at 90 minutes, they'd probably have bitten your hand off. Or one or two of their players would anyway. Suarez, Barry.
Yeah.
Do you think it was this business of FA talking about people consuming football? He's got the wrong end of the stick.
Possibly. Although I see on his Twitter account today, he announced he's been fined and has asked the club to donate the fine. He didn't specify how much to the Hillsborough Family Support Group, which is good. And he apologised yesterday, which is good. And the club have handled the fallout from his bite on Ivanovic quite well, which is probably a lesson they learned after having handled the fallout from his racial incident with Patrice Evra so badly. But the fact of the matter is he did bite somebody, and not for the first time.
And not inadvertently either. It was the way that he looked, grabbed the arm, and then dived in.
Yeah, and I mean, it's funny. Let's face it, it is funny. And Suarez is box office. He's a great player. There's never a dull moment because he's so unpredictable. But some of his behaviour is pretty bad. And,
can you explain to Amy's five-year-old why it's funny for Suarez to bite someone but not okay for Amy's five-year-old?
No, I probably can't.
Right.
No.
I struggled with that as well.
Yeah.
Confession. Yes.
I mean, if a dog had done that,
yeah,
he would be put down. No, I'm not saying that.
Congratulations, Barry.
Luis Suarez.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah, I'm not saying that that's an appropriate punishment, but and it's a dog's nature to bite things,
right.
You know.
You're not helping yourself.
It shouldn't really be Luis Suarez's thing.
No.
But
I do wonder if it's an unresolved toddler thing. Toddlers bite. And they usually are educated not to, but he, in moments of stress, clearly has this impulse to bite things. The famous Ajax one.
It's a really weird
thing.
You know, I mean, he didn't hurt Ivanovic. Nobody died. And Suarez apologists have been saying, but what about, you know, Jermaine Defoe did it before. He didn't get criticised.
That was really strange. I was watching it again this morning because Mascherano comes in and takes him down. They're both on the floor. Defoe looks round at him and scurries towards him as if he's really going to give him a problem. But of all the options, kind of grazes on his arm a bit.
Yeah. It's just such a strange thing to do.
I'll have a nibble.
You know, and yeah, a potential leg-breaking tackle is bad, or an elbow, or whatever. But it's just biting seems really beyond the pale.
And unhealthy. I mean, unsanitary as well.
There can't be many players who get to the end of their careers and can honestly say to themselves, I've not tried to hurt somebody on a football pitch. Yeah. You know, either throwing a punch or by going in a little bit too hard. But biting somebody is odd. It is an odd thing to do.
We've all been, you know, in sporting situations. I've never thought, you know what?
But it does. I mean, we looked at it. I did a sort of little pattern to math, but it happens in other sports, you know.
Biting?
Rugby, yeah. Rugby, there's people get cited for biting and things.
Really?
And, well, Dylan Hartley in the Six Nations last year. But that was a basketballer in the 80s got
done. Was this in a scrum? Was it when your arms are basically out of
action? You're in a kind of combat-y situation where you are kind of, if your head's pressed up against somebody else's head,
right,
and you're going, I'm really angry with them, then you can understand lashing out in that way. Perhaps it's kind of a handy thing to get hold of. But in the situation on a football field, weird.
I think Ivanovic's response was quite incredible as well. I mean, you talk about the incredibleness of what Suarez did, but Ivanovic showed, for a player who's got a little bit of aggression about him as well, certainly in the way he plays, but positive aggression, I would say. He was amazing in that he didn't respond really or retaliate.
His reaction was more of horror than of anger, almost. Huh?
But I thought what was even more incredible is when the referee goes, who clearly hadn't really seen what had been going on, and I think there was a bit of an exchange with Petr Cech, who also I think hadn't really seen it, and explained afterwards that he was just basically trying to alert the referee to the fact that Suarez seems to be bundling into defenders as a sort of general course of action throughout any of his time in the penalty box. But none of them had seen what had gone on, and then the referee went to speak to Suarez, and Suarez did his sort of who me thing and then did an ironic sarcastic thumbs up towards Ivanovic, which was really amazing. Yeah,
I saw that, yeah. Having previously grabbed his arm like a large baguette.
But the reaction has been kind of strange as well. Some people think it's no big deal at all. Others think it's absolutely terrible. I'm kind of somewhere in the middle.
I heard one person was talking about shooting dogs if they bite people. Where was that? Oh, yeah, sorry.
But that is a fact. If a dog bites a human, it will get put down.
Right.
I'm just stating that as a fact. That's what happens.
Yeah. But, yeah, absolutely.
I think Liverpool have been quite smart, and it's been mentioned that this was the very first week of their new communications director, who must have felt that she'd bitten off a bit more than she could chew with this job.
Amy.
Sorry. I felt a bit for Brendan Rodgers, because obviously he was asked about it straight away in the post-match interview. And apart from the fact that what's he supposed to do except buy himself some time, I think it'd be completely unreasonable to expect him in that situation to come out and indicate some kind of punishment that he's going to do. It's obvious that Liverpool have to discuss that at the very top level. I don't think Rodgers should be making that kind of decision without talking about it.
Right. The FA presumably going to issue a heavy ban. Is his season over, possibly, is it, Suarez?
You'd think so. When he did that at Ajax, he got 7 games. So presuming he gets the same now or more, you would imagine, well, that's his season over.
Mm. Isn't there an argument that Liverpool, obviously they've fined him, but possibly should be inflicting some kind of other punishment as well? Because if it's just the buck is entirely passed to the FA to mete out judgment, then any employer, you would think, when one of their employees has done something weird like that, would be expected maybe to respond their own way. And I think when players are on the kind of money that a top Premier League player is on, you just have to wonder about the efficacy of fines anyway.
Well, that's true.
The PFA are sending him on an anger management course.
So they've offered to. Is that mandatory? It's interesting. Should we talk about the football as well? Because it was a terrific. Yeah. The second half of that was Liverpool looked brilliant. There was some Sturridge looked fantastic.
Well, I think if you took Suarez, he had made other significant contributions.
The handball to
give away the penalty. Then he scored the winner. I thought it was a fantastic goal.
And his cross for the Sturridge goal was delightful as well.
Yeah, but even before that, who was it who just dinked the ball across to him?
It was Downing.
Dinking the ball. Yeah. Super, because it was a long ball over the top, wasn't it? And he just one touch kind of flicked it off to Suarez. Lovely stuff.
I mean, if Suarez does leave Liverpool, obviously they would get a lot of money for him, a minimum, you would think, 50 million, possibly 60, 70 more.
That's a lot of money, Barry. Are you sure they get all that for him?
Well, yeah. I mean, if they're the kind of figures being touted for Gareth Bale, Suarez is, I think, probably as good a player. He's one of the best players in the Premier League.
No, he may well get Player of the Year, of course.
It's quite unlikely
at this
stage.
Well, hasn't the voting already finished by now?
I would say it's still unlikely. I don't think players are that bothered about those kind of things anyway, either voting or winning them.
Yeah.
Do you know how Olympic medalists, when they get their gold medal, and they bite into the to see if it's... Do you think if he did get the PFA award, he'd give it a little...
Cheeky bite?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Amy, what have we not said about this game?
We've not mentioned the fact that the lateness of and the drama of Suarez's goal to equalise has had a massive impact, well, potentially, on Chelsea's aspirations of finishing on the top four, because that would have been a great away win to put them probably back in the prime position to finish.
Put them in third, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, Arsenal on 63 points, and then Chelsea on 62, and then Spurs on 61. So only 2 points between them. Arsenal, though, have played one game more than everybody else. They had a not particularly impressive 1-0 win away to Fulham.
Yes, but bear in mind also when you're looking at the table that Tottenham and Chelsea play each other.
Oh, that's
week,
a good point.
So that kind of potentially adds
and,
to the intrigue.
Arsenal play Man United without Giroud because he got a red card at the end.
Yes, I think that possibly might do them a favour though, because he's although he plays, he's the only real player that can lead the line in the way that formation that Arsene Wenger wants to play. He looks absolutely knackered at the moment and is struggling to make an impact on games, and I felt like he's needed a rest for these last few weeks anyway, and that he doesn't get one because Wenger doesn't seem to have
and they
anybody
can
else he can play. But
Theo
he's
Walcott
got to
in that role
now.
As well. No?
Possibly could be. This is the great talking point at the moment. Will it be Theo? Will it be Jovino?
Well, that is a big
Podolski?
Talking point. No, interesting days then for Arsenal's top four chances. The Giroud's out very much on that one. Tumbleweed. 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 That's it for part one. We'll be back after this, hey, with Europa League and Champions League, Sid V. Rafa. It's on. Sid.
Hello, James.
Hi, Sid. We got Rafa up alongside, so let's ask the real questions. All right, Spain v. Germany, which is best? Rafa.
Well, at the moment, Spain is best.
Yeah.
There's no doubt that Spain are still best. They're better. The national team is better. The two teams are better, Real Madrid and Barcelona. But Bayern and Dortmund have as good a chance as any German team of any persuasion in recent years to change that dynamic, or at least to come to the same level.
Wow.
With wins in the semi-finals. I give both Bayern and Dortmund a very good chance to win their respective games.
Well, Bayern are actually your favourites to go through against Barca, perhaps after the way they made Arsenal and Juventus look puny, and their sixth consecutive semi-final now. This is pretty much their greatest season ever, is it? I mean, the way they're playing, the way they've dominated everything?
Well, it is, but I was looking up some earlier statements from 1999, in March 1999, when everyone's saying, this is the best team ever, we can win the treble. And you know how that story ended in Barcelona as it happened. So, you know, the fact that they are playing this really exciting and very successful football, breaking all the records, is all good and well. But it'll mean very little if Barcelona beat them in any fashion.
Mm.
So this really comes down now to them showing that the progress that they've made since the last time they met in 2009, when Jürgen Klinsmann was at the helm, and I use that term loosely, has not just taken them to the same level, but perhaps to a level where they can actually beat them. So
Sid,
they need to prove that now.
All right, excellent. Sid, how worried? What's the mood in the Catalan capital, etc.?
Well, this is the first time that I can remember, certainly since Guardiola took over, that Barcelona go into a European game thinking that they're not favourites. Certainly the way it's been presented in the media is that Bayern Munich are a genuinely strong side, probably stronger than Barcelona right now. Bear in mind, it's quite curious in a way that Barcelona next weekend could clinch the league title, and yet it feels like they're not in a good shape. It feels like they're not a good team. And there's a nice little comment from Zubizarreta today with a nice touch of irony when he said, oh yes, the league, it's that clandestine tournament that you play between European games.
Well, it's almost like they won it several months ago, no?
Yeah, I think this is part of the problem. I think he's obviously having a dig at that sense that people aren't valuing what's been an astonishingly good league campaign, certainly in terms of results. But there is, of course, that sense that as always, European Cup overshadows everything else, particularly in Spain, where it's really the focal point of the identity, particularly for Real Madrid, but then by definition and by extension of that for Barcelona as well.
Mm.
So that has been forgotten, partly, as you say, because it kind of got cleared up too early. And now going into this, I think there is a sense of vulnerability about Barcelona. There's an enormous amount of respect for Bayern Munich. There's a belief that Bayern Munich are the team that they both wanted to avoid. And yeah, Barcelona possibly not even favourites this time.
Plus, their away form this season has been absolutely hideous. They lost at Milan, they only drew with PSG, and they were pretty lucky to get through that. And they lost, of course, away at Celtic earlier on in the campaign.
Well, actually, I think I'd take that further. It's not just this year. I mean, over the last 3 or 4 years, Barcelona's away form hasn't been that great in terms of results. I chuck a big caveat in there, which is I thought they were far, far better than Paris Saint-Germain in Paris. Their poor performance against PSG was at home rather than away. But yeah, absolutely, they were defeated by Celtic, as you say, and they were very, very poor in Milan. Against Milan, and they are a side, I think, who are vulnerable, and I'll have to admit, it's not just kind of what's in the air. I think I'd agree with that. I think I would agree that Bayern Munich are probably favourites.
Right, okay. Now Bayern Munich, Rafa, no Mandzukic, who suspended, Toni Kroos injured, yeah?
Yeah, that's right.
But is the bigger news the injury story at the back for Barcelona, do you think?
Possibly. I mean, the biggest news in Bayern is of course, what's happening off the pitch with Uli Hoeneß. That is really the big news that's threatening to overshadow the whole thing. And the narrative is almost written in many ways, because if Bayern now were to crash out against Barcelona, it will forever be linked with the news that Uli Hoeneß has gone to the police and registered the fact that he himself has avoided taxes in the past, and there are all sorts of possible implications, not just for Bayern, but perhaps even for German football, if he were to resign after this affair plays out. So that is the big news. But off on the pitch, of course, the fact that Barcelona are a little bit short both figuratively speaking, but also literally at the back, makes, you know, has been picked up by Bayern. And I think that's part of the reason why perhaps Mario Gomez will play rather than Claudio Pizarro up front, because Bayern feel that he might give them a little bit extra. They would have loved to have Mandzukic, because with him, the pressing is really the secret weapon for them this season. But I think Pizarro will be somebody that they'll use on the bench if they need him later on.
All right, okay. Prediction on the score?
I'm going to go for 1-0 for Bayern.
All right, okay. What do you think of that, Sid?
I think that's perfectly plausible. Yeah. I think obviously a lot will depend on Messi. Messi's travelled, but hasn't yet been travelled with the official all clear from the doctors. This happened in the last game as well against Paris Saint-Germain. We had the Barcelona team sheet at the Camp Nou the night before the game, and the little asterisks by three players, still pending doctors all clear. Now, we all know that he will play, because, of course, there's no reason to believe that he's regressed from the last game. And he played then, even though he was half injured. The question mark is whether or not he's in really good shape. As you say, the defensive side of it is Barcelona's really big worry. No Mascherano, no Puyol.
What about Borussia Dortmund against Real Madrid? Now, listen, Borussia faced Madrid twice in the group stages. They beat them once, and they very nearly beat them again at the Bernabeu. So why are they not favourites here? Are Real Madrid, are they a lot better than they were back at the group stages?
Yes, that's one of the key points, is that Madrid now look physically very, very strong. They've got pretty much everyone available in terms of the starting 11. There's a couple of doubts about squad players, Modric, Marcelo, even Diego Lopez got a little bit of a knock on his hip at the weekend, but I don't think that's going to be a problem. But fundamentally there, that's the bottom line. Real Madrid look stronger, physically quicker, more aggressive, more like the side they were last year at the moment. There were a couple of key pointers in the group game which I think will be resolved this time around. In particular, Michael Essien playing at left back in Germany, and he got completely torn apart. But of course it's true, yeah. Madrid played them twice and weren't able to beat them either time. I think Madrid probably are just about favourites, but I've really, really enjoyed watching Dortmund. I think they're a good side. Jurgen Klopp gave an interview to El País about a month or so ago before he knew that he was going to be facing Real Madrid again. And he said, oh, well, beating Madrid's easy. You just sort out Xabi Alonso. So I wonder if he might regret having admitted that publicly now.
What do you think, Rafa?
Well, I think Dortmund have got a good chance. I think the fact that they're at home first might actually work for them. The same goes for Bayern. I think both these teams are set up to score goals away from home, which gives them an advantage if they have the second leg in Spain. And, you know, the way that's been playing in the Champions League, especially at home, would suggest that they're going to create all sorts of problems for Real Madrid. I think Real Madrid underestimated Dortmund in the group stages. They won't make that mistake again. I think tactically they'll be better prepared to deal with Dortmund's pressing. But at the same time, we shouldn't forget that Dortmund have also evolved. You know, they press a little bit differently than they did last year. They press a little bit later. They press a little bit more in a more controlled manner. The Xabi Alonso line was, of course, very telling. They press in certain parts of the area rather than everywhere, which they tried last year and it didn't work. But they also have all the great performances in the Champions League. So domestically, they haven't looked that exciting. And again, you know, the 2-0 win of a mind, you thought, you know, Matsumo said, if we play like that, we're going to get absolutely slaughtered. But they haven't played like that whenever they played in the Champions League. So while Real Madrid look very strong, I think Dortmund perhaps don't quite look as strong as they really are. And I feel that they've got a very, very good chance. They'll be very close. Real Madrid, as Sid said, maybe just about favourites, but I think Dortmund might still be underrated somewhat.
Sid, Real have only won once in 24 visits to Germany. Are they going to do it this week?
I don't know that they necessarily... They don't necessarily need to win in Germany, obviously.
Right.
I think they'll be very happy with a result that means that they scored. Particularly if they could get a score draw, I think they'd be relatively happy with that. Even when they were being beaten by Dortmund before, they did create a handful of chances. The Ronaldo goal was a classic Madrid goal, quick diagonal over the top of the fullback with Ronaldo coming in from the left to lob it over the keeper. And I think Raf's right. I think Madrid will be better prepared this time around. I think, not to say they weren't well prepared last time, because yeah, one thing you can never accuse Mourinho is of not preparing his team, but perhaps was slightly caught out by it, say had one or two slight doubts about how they'd set up their side with injuries and so on. And I think they are stronger this time around. So I think Madrid are slightly favourites, but I think it's brilliant. I think we've got four teams where any one of these four teams wins the Champions League this time, and you think, yeah, they're proper good European champions.
Excellent. Rafa, any final thoughts?
No.
Good. All right, then. Guys, thank you very much for that. Thank you very much for that, and enjoy your midweek of cross-continental rivalry madness.
Thank you.
Cheers, Rafa.
Cheerio.
Cheers, Sid.
Bye.
How about that, Amy? Who do you think took that one? Rafa or Sid, Barry?
I think we're just lucky to have two such erudite
The real winner
experts.
Was football punditry.
Yes. Exactly.
It was like De Niro and Pacino in Heat.
Hey, it was, wasn't it?
Being at the airport.
Yeah. Cool. Is there time, I wonder, is there time to mention the Europa League now before Ben throws in a bit of music? Apparently there's a little bit of time. Teeny weeny. Benfica, who Amy was drooling over before, and what an attractive sight that was, are going to be away at Fenerbahce. They're having a great season, aren't they, Benfica? Care to venture an opinion about that game, Amy?
I think Benfica will go through.
All right. They look good against Newcastle, didn't they?
Yeah, I think, and as you say, they're unbeaten, I think, in the domestic season. Yep. I think Fenerbahce, it's going to be a bit of a stretch for them to come through this, although there's tremendous excitement about their first ever semi-final.
Right.
I expect Benfica to go through.
Here's a list of teams for you. Bayern, Manchester United, Zenit St. Petersburg and Tottenham Hotspur. What links those four teams, John Ashton?
Oh, they've all lost to Basel this season.
In the last two seasons.
The last two seasons.
And Basel, as most people are calling them, still...
Renegade there.
All right, then.
I'm like, isn't it Basel?
It's Basel.
Is it Basel?
Basel, yeah. Yeah.
Why do I call them Basel, then?
That's a question only you can answer, John. It's their first ever European semi-final, Basel. What do you think, Barry?
I said before, I think they've as good a chance as any of the four teams left in it of winning, if not a better chance than some. I've been very impressed with them on the few occasions I've seen them this season. And they're sort of like a Barcelona.
Exactly, aren't they?
Sugar-free or light.
Yeah.
And, I'd fancy them to beat Chelsea.
Regular pod listeners will know that it's actually because of Basel that Barcelona play in their colours.
Yeah.
Yeah, you knew that as well, okay.
Well, I only knew because Jonathan Wilson told us.
Was it Jonathan Wilson?
He told us in the first of our
video podcast thing. Basel are unbeaten at home in six matches, averaging exactly two goals a game in this season's Europa League, whereas Chelsea have lost their last two away in the Europa League and four of their past five European away games. Doesn't sound good for Rafa's Blues, does it?
No, and they were against Rubin in the last round. They were very shaky away from home. I know you've got the plastic pitch there and what have you, but... yeah, and again at the weekend, I suppose you saw that Chelsea have got that sort of fragility at the back.
Mm. I think a lot depends on what kind of team Benitez wishes to pick.
Surely he has to go. This is his last chance at silverware.
You would think so, but it's whether he's putting in teenagers who haven't hardly played before and the likes of Menayoun to start the game and so on. It definitely makes a difference to how Chelsea play.
Hey, posts. Barry?
Yes?
Yeah. Hey, you're pretty quiet on the below the line these days, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Jacob Steinberg was weighing in this week. Anyway, here's a couple of juicy posts. 16th Beatle, will there be a Confederations Daily podcast this summer? That would be woof. He says, breaking new ground in the usage of said exclamation. Ben? All right. That's a possible, apparently. All depends on the money being offered, I think, Barry. Is that right?
Confederations?
Confederations Cup, a daily show? Would you be in for that?
Yeah,
do that. Good.
Speaking of money, actually, back when we were talking about the Europa League, Chelsea's players inquired of their paymasters if they'd be getting bonuses for winning it, and were told in no uncertain terms that the embarrassment alone of only winning the Europa League should be reward enough for them, and that they would not be getting financial inducements.
The fact of winning the Europa League is only possible because they're in the Europa League because they failed in the Champions League.
Yeah, I think they were kind of chancing their arms.
Yeah, well, players, eh? Johnny Five Eyes points out that the Swedish for tax is skatt. So every time in Sweden you play the Inland Revenue, which as I understand it's quite often there, you are literally paying the scat man. Skiddy-biddy-biddy-bop-bop-bop, as he then concludes. Yeah, a lot of posts about scat man, John. who, as you say, was a scout man. There's a can't think of a good name with a series of puns, which was very good, but probably too long to read out here. But you'll enjoy that below the line on last week's podcast page. Moving along, AJ Pex says, could the pod manage not to talk about Suarez and eulogise Celtic? I'm not sure if he not wants us not to do both or to not do one.
No, I think he wants us not to mention Suarez, which... Yep.
Okay, job
sorry
done.
Sorry about yep. that.
And Celtic?
Yeah, well, they won the league as everyone expected. I think yep. they were 33-1 on
oh, really?
To win the title at the start of the season. So if you put £33,000 on them, you'll have collected your £1,000 at the weekend.
Well, that still seems like good money to me. I mean, what could possibly have gone wrong? Nothing, really.
Yeah.
I can't see it. Anyway, good. Well done to them. So that's now 28 seasons in a row.
I would argue, though, that if there's a very slight possibility that something might go wrong, you know,
right.
some sort of illness or plane crash or something.
Yeah.
If you have the £33,000, you probably don't need the one that badly.
Right. Okay. Yep. Again, a fair point. Although it's those kind of fine margins that I think professional sports gamblers live on.
I believe also in Scotland, our friend Fernando Duarte went to see Rangers play at Ibrox on Saturday, and they were beaten by Peterhead, which is kind of embarrassing for them, even though they're already champions. And Fernando was, by all accounts, in the Loudon Tavern drinking before and after the game, which is a famous Rangers pub.
Right.
Which give out free rolls.
Free rolls?
Yeah.
What kind of rolls?
Bread rolls, sandwiches.
Oh. That's nice.
So I don't know if he emerged
Sang.
Unscathed or,
right.
you know, had committed a faux pas, a Rangers-related faux pas. But
I'm sure they welcomed him to the bosom. Daniel Ferry says, shout out to Partick Thistle for making it back to the SPL on tomorrow's pod, please. You predicted this, didn't you, Barry? Apparently you did. Somebody's mentioned the fact that ages ago, somebody randomly asked you. I think Max Rushton randomly asked you if SPL could get promotion. You said yes. And indeed they did.
That means that three of the four Scottish leagues have been won by teams from the Glasgow area, I believe.
Good knowledge. Also winning promotion this week, Bournemouth. The Cherries.
Yep, by dint of the fact that the two closest rivals, Brentford and Doncaster, play each other
Ooh.
In a huge promotion, essentially a playoff final before Ooh. The playoffs down at Griffin Park next weekend.
Right. It'll be huge.
Yeah, well, Bournemouth are a point clear, and Doncaster are 2 points ahead of Brentford.
Mm.
So a Brentford win at home would see them leapfrog Doncaster into second.
Right.
And et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Okay. Meanwhile, up in the Championship, Cardiff now sealed the title.
Yep.
And second place very much up for grabs.
Well, no? Hull need to win one of their last two.
Ah.
And you'd imagine they would do, considering the form of the teams. Well, only Watford, I think, can stop them now. And they've had a quite patchy form of late anyway.
Right. But the big news in the playoff picture below them is Brighton.
Yeah, they're surging. They've hammered Blackpool at the weekend.
6-1.
6-1, a proper shellacking.
Mm.
And yeah, it's one of those situations where the form table in the Championship changes like Spinal Tap's drummer.
Right.
Never the same. And the teams that are in the playoff shake-up, you've got Palace, who have no win in 7. Leicester just outside, they have 1 win in 11. Forest are still in with a chance, they have 1 win in 6. And these are all teams that could be in the Premier League next year.
Wow. What, give us those four again. Or was it 6?
Well, there was Palace, Leicester, Forest, Brighton are all in the mix. And there's also Bolton.
Who would you like to see go up with Hull if it's them and Cardiff?
Brighton or Palace. I've always had a soft spot for those two. I tell you what.
Big rivals, those
two,
aren't
Brighton
they?
Palace playoff final at Wembley would be something. With absolutely no disrespect to Watford, Bolton, Leicester or Forest.
Right.
Leicester and Forest actually play each other the last game of the season in, again, what could be a pre-playoff playoff.
Right. Hey, John, what about the situation at the bottom, where, if I'm not mistaken, of the Championship, there are 10 teams within 6 points of each other or something?
Yeah, it's very, very close. I think there's...
Bristol City's down already.
Bristol City have gone, and then between 15th and 23rd,
yeah,
they're all separated by 4 points.
Right, Barnsley, Wolves, Peterborough in there, Blackburn, who have a game in hand, and Huddersfield as well. Some big names.
Yeah, and... Wolves look particularly vulnerable. Barnsley, Wolves, and Peterborough are the three that are most likely to go into two. But yeah, it's going to go down to the last day. It could be another fascinating shootout.
Well, speaking of last game of the season being a bit special, how about that upcoming Wigan-Aston Villa affair on the final day of the Premier League season? Because it does look like it's going to be between those two now for who's going down. Wigan got beaten by West Ham at the weekend, and Villa yet to play. They're going to be playing this evening. If they win tonight against Man United, that means that QPR and Reading will be mathematically down. Johnny Late says, I know Monday's pod will come too soon for the Villa United outcome, etc. Blah, 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 blah. A decent possibility of both Reading and QPR being relegated before next Sunday's live and exclusive clash on Sky. Surely it promises to be the least attractive Sky game ever. Yeah? The only point of the game is that it'll almost certainly decide who will finish bottom, as I doubt either will get another point from their remaining games. It's an interesting shout, that. How would you promote that game, were you in Sky's promo department?
I don't know. They'll think of something, won't
they? Sure they will. QPR Reading.
It'll be interesting to see
Battle of the Hoops.
What that something is.
Wow.
It's the wooden spoon at stake.
Yeah. Wow, I'm looking forward to that. Best of luck then, Sky promo department. Should we talk? Now, John, you were at Loftus Road for QPR Strokes. Stoke.
Yeah.
Tell us about that one.
Well, there's not much to tell, really. It's that there were two teams that looked incredibly short of confidence, incredibly brittle at the back, and were only ever one kind of loose ball or bodge deflection or a clearance away from conceding. And QPR played perfectly well for the first 40 minutes, had chances. Remy was excellent. Tarapt got on the ball lots and did some brilliant things and did some terrible things.
He came close, didn't he, with that shot from range?
Yeah, he had a decent effort. I mean, he's ludicrously frustrating player, because sometimes he looks brilliant and sometimes he looks awful, and they try and get everything to go through him. So once he went off in the second half, they basically lost all their attacking game plan, and they really struggled. They had the retaken penalty in the second half. That first John Walters penalty that didn't count, I was saying earlier, was one of the most unstoppable penalties I've ever seen.
What was so unstoppable about it, John?
Well, he just ran up and he just caught it absolutely flush, and it was rising as it hit the roof of the net. I mean, actually, you know, just underneath the bar. It was reminiscent of the Kevin Pressman penalty against Wolves all those years ago. If you don't remember that one, it's one to look up on YouTube, when Pressman absolutely just takes a penalty like he's taking a goal kick, but manages to keep it low enough that it beats the Wolves keeper. Yeah, and it was such a shame that the second one was just a bit of a letdown after that.
But a big...
No, I was just going to say, I thought it was quite admirable of him having sort of been highlighted by people for having had such an awful time earlier in the season against Chelsea, where he scored a couple of own goals and missed a penalty. So the spotlight was a bit on him, and to take a retaken penalty is never that easy, and he took the second one away brilliantly. But just onto QPR, briefly, and I know Michael Hand's not here, who would have obviously been
probably
anything
best.
But brief.
Yeah.
But when Redknapp took over... he made a big thing of almost throwing in the towel before he'd started, and he talked up so much the fact that there was such a difficult job ahead and the expectations were going to be very tough. But I don't think I was probably alone in expecting a lift of some description when Redknapp came in. Some new players at fair expense came in. I mean, 20 million alone, wasn't it, on Samba and Remy. And I think that it's been... really a question. There'll have to be big questions asked of why there's been no response, why there's been no sort of upsurge.
Well, I got the answer to that.
There's been such little...
Because the players aren't talented. Harry's been quite clear on this. You say they're talented. I don't know. Are they talented? So that's for the problem. The players aren't good enough.
He repeats that again this week, saying that why these players don't want to play in the Championship. Who's put them in the Championship? They put themselves in the Championship.
He also said when people say...
Then why take the job?
He's still picking the team. Yeah. And he's got a poorer win ratio.
He's got a record of improving players.
Right.
He's got a record of getting players to be inspired and motivated.
Right.
And I think that was probably the least that QPR fans would have expected.
When people say next year QPR will come straight back up, I'm afraid they're talking rubbish, said Harry. Because the player's rubbish. That's the implication
Well, he said after the game that if somebody asked him if he could change one thing about his reign, what would it be? And he said he would have tried harder to get Peter Odemwingie in.
Yeah.
Rather than I wouldn't have wasted 12 million on Chris Samba, who's been useless.
Right. But do you think with Odemwingie, would that have...
No, because they got Remy in instead.
Yeah, that's true.
And he's been great.
I saw in one of the interviews post-match, I can't remember who's doing it, the interviewer turned around to Harry Redknapp and said... any regrets, Harry?
Yeah.
I would agree with him, though, that there's it seems unlikely they'll come straight back up because the players don't seem to care.
Hmm.
And if they end up saddled with a load of guys on huge contracts that, you know, won't go elsewhere and are happy to sit tight in the Championship, then, you know, they're not, if they're not able to get up for games in the Premier League, the Championship's a bit of a slog by comparison. They're very unlikely to be particularly interested in winning any of those matches either.
Mm. Well, it's a bit bleak, isn't it?
Well, Tony Fernandez said he'd walk away
if
they got relegated, which he's not.
If I can't fix it, I will be the first to go.
Mm. Well, what he said on Twitter yesterday evening, yeah. I think it was, that they need to follow the lead of his Caterham Formula One team, who've learnt their lessons and are improving. And they finished bottom of the Formula One Championship last year with no points. And in 2013, they're currently bottom of the Formula One Championship with no points.
I don't know why we're laughing. This is terrible.
What possible help? To say, I'll walk away if we go down, as if it's some kind of gallant, noble thing to do. Mm. Well, that's really not helping at all, is it?
Mm. It's the opposite, really.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, and he's just taken out a loan.
Yeah. £15 million.
Mm-hmm. For the Elite Training Centre. Good. All right. Well, not good in the case of QPR, but very good for Stoke, who look as though they're... Because you've now got Wigan at the bottom three with 31 points, 3 points above them of Villa, and then 3 points above them, so six above Wigan, are Sunderland, Stoke and Newcastle, all three of whom have played one game more, though, than Wigan and Villa, if you follow me there. But it was a huge win, was it not, for Sunderland this weekend at home to Everton?
Yeah, second in a row and the first time they've beaten Everton in 19 attempts. Apparently Everton were very flat and uninspired. Marouane Fellaini was played as a holding sort of midfielder, which seemed a bit strange. And they're quite toothless up front, unlike their Merseyside neighbours. Sorry, everyone has to get one in.
I've not done mine yet.
Lacked appetite.
And yeah, Sessegnon, super for Sunderland again, scored a second goal in two games, and you'd think they're probably safe now.
Interesting. Di Canio quotes about Sessegnon where he says basically he's been used before as a winger, but that's not him. You have to have a desire to run up and down, Paolo said, but in a more engaging kind of Mediterranean fashion. You have to want to run up and down, and Sessegnon doesn't. So he said to him, no, don't worry about that. I'll get other people to do that. You stay up there and do the jinky stuff up at the top end. Mm-hmm. He does seem to have an incredible impact on the players.
Yeah, they've... I don't know, is it that he's had an incredible impact or Martin O'Neill seems to have had an incredible lack of impact?
Right.
Because, you know, you've players like John O'Shea, a senior player who's spent most of his career at Manchester United playing for Sir Alex Ferguson, and he was interviewed and he said, we're all really enjoying training, we're all giving it 100% now, and, you know, the usual stuff. And you'd expect a player, obviously, to talk up a new manager to stay in his good books, but it does sort of... That and the manner in which they were just sleepwalking towards relegation under O'Neill really does make you wonder what the problem was then.
Right. Who's going to go down?
Oh, God. I keep changing my mind. Now, this week, I think Wigan are.
Wigan, yeah. Amy, what do you think?
I think we'll have to wait till that last game.
That's a great shout, because Wigan and Villa, they play each other on the last day of the season. That's going to be amazing. That's one I could promo. John?
Well, Wigan have survived in a final day shootout before, of course, when the year that Sheffield United went down. I think it was 2007. I've tried to forget it as much as possible.
The Tevez season.
Yeah, the Tevez season. Yeah. And that was, they won at Bramall Lane. They needed to win at Bramall Lane on the final day.
Hmm.
And results to go their way, I think. And they did, so that at least there's some kind of collective experience there.
All right, okay. Well... It's going to be quite a finale to this season, this final month. Should mention, I think, two things before we wrap up for today. One is Barnet's final game at Underhill. It was a 1-0 win for Edgar Davids' side. He's a funny man, Edgar Davids, isn't he?
Yeah, and Underhill is a funny stadium.
Yeah, have you been there?
I have a few times, actually. Yeah. James Darts and I used to go whenever Plymouth were playing there.
Tell us what's so particular about it, Barry.
Well, it's got a huge slope, for a start, like really noticeable, so that if your team is playing a certain way, you're actually running downhill. I've said before on the podcast, so sorry if I'm boring regular listeners or long-time listeners even more than usual, but the greatest goal I've ever seen scored that I was actually watching was there by a young man named Scott Sinclair, who's since gone on to make a huge name for himself as a driving force behind Manchester City's success this season.
Yeah.
Where he was on loan from Chelsea at Plymouth. He was only 17 at the time, picked up the ball inside his own penalty area, ran the length of the pitch going downhill.
Oh, going downhill, yeah.
And beat 5-6 players and then rifled the ball into the roof of the net from what looked like an impossible angle. But Underhill is a lovely little stadium, at the bottom of a hill.
Which supermarket are they going to turn it into?
I don't know.
Oh.
Another
sad day for sport, eh?
Yeah. Yeah, it is,
Although clearly it's not, up to code.
Where will Arsenal, don't Arsenal reserves play at Underhill?
They do.
Where will they now disappear to?
I think there is one remaining match at Underhill, and that's Arsenal under 21s against Liverpool reserves like that. Maybe next week. So if you haven't been yet, it's worth going for a look if you can be bothered.
Okay. And, more fan trouble. Kidderminster Stockport. Not sure what we can say about this apart from it happened, and it's obviously a bad thing. But it does seem that, we did raise this, and John, you were saying, I asked, was it just a coincidence, or there have been lots of these incidents that haven't gone reported? And once one gets reported, other ones start getting reported. And this, with the Stockport fans running onto the pitch and hitting Lee Vaughan of Kidderminster after their victory in that match, was kind of thing you see, in other countries, Italy, for example, quite a lot, unfortunately, particularly in the
It wasn't after the victory, wasn't it? It was after it scored.
Oh, it was just after it scored.
After Kidderminster had taken the lead.
Right.
So but that defeat in that match and Stockport lost heavily meant they're relegated to
the Conference North. Blue Square North.
And not so long ago, they were a championship side.
Yeah.
There was, because of that pitch invasion, there was 33 minutes of injury time. A minimum of 33 minutes of injury time at the end of the match, which must be some sort of record.
Quite possibly. But horrifying stuff. I mean, you can see the funny side of Luis Suarez, but that, people running onto the pitch and hitting other people,
It happened not so long ago, wasn't it, in a Leeds-Sheffield Wednesday game with...
With Chris Kirkland was shoved over, yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Right, OK. Well, that brings us almost to the end of today's pod. So, John, if you're going to... Suarez pun now or never...
Yeah, I think I don't know. My mind's gone blank.
No, somebody I think it does you
somebody,
credit.
Can somebody feed me a line?
No, I think.
No.
Has he done it?
Well,
that was
feed
it.
Him.
Oh, that was it.
Yeah.
All right.
Bass was extremely excited about it. Nobody else.
I thought it was great.
I was going to salute you for your refusal to bow to this kind of nationwide, hashtag Suarez pun frenzy.
Mm. Yeah,
but never mind.
Yeah, I can't think of. Sorry, I'm making a right mess of this.
No, don't worry. Good.
He doesn't have the appetite for it.
Yeah, I think we had that one, Barry, didn't we? Yeah, had appetite.
I'm just wondering what producer Ben has got lined up to play us out with. What tune?
Appetite by Prefab Sprout.
Hungry Like the Wolf.
Ooh! Yeah. I think we might run out.
Uruguayan athletes have a kind of history of this kind of thing. Cause remember that rugby team in the Andes?
Oh, they ate each other, didn't they? That's a good shout. Very
so
true.
It's quite possible that on this occasion in Uruguay, it's completely
et cetera and so on. No, nice socio-political kind of background on that. Nice. Well, today's part a tough act to follow, and it's Jonathan Wilson and Michael Cox who'll be doing their best to do just that in Thursday's edition with Barry, who will also be joining us. And that looks like being bit special.
I'm not going to be able to sleep now ahead of that. I was getting stressed.
No, don't worry. They'll be off in their own little world and you and I can plod happily on. And then on Friday there's another video with Barry and James Horncastle, which is going to be a bit disconcerting for anyone who's not seen him in the flesh.
Why?
Because it doesn't marry. The two things don't marry, sound and vision on that one. I mean, you can say that about a lot of people. And a lot of people say that about you, but I think James Horncastle is possibly the most extreme example of that I know of. But anyway, do have a look at that on Friday and see for yourselves, and that'll be great. That's very much it, though. So bye for now, everyone. Have a super mid... Oh, Amy?
No, I was just thinking about the Sky promo for the QPR Reading game.
All right.
When the way you've inspired people to now watch that podcast on Friday. You must be able to think of something.
Listeners, do post your ideas And you know, listeners at Sky, read the postings below the line, and maybe you might come up with something. I mean, it's got to be, you know, the worst televised game of all time. So I was there, basically. You know, years later, you can say to people, "Yeah, I watched that." I mean, one for the purists. Be a purist. That's it for today. And have a super midweek. Enjoy the Champions League football, etc. And we'll speak to you on Thursday.
Watch out, boy.